Up next, Kim Dennis joins us. Clairvoyant Kim, as they call her. Her book, What's Above? Medium Clairvoyant Kim shares her journey, healing messages, and inspirational stories. In our final hour, of course, you can talk with her about clairvoyancy and mediumship, as she's a psychic medium as well. But we'll also take questions from you about, any question you might ask her about your dearly departed or whatever you want. So that'll be in our final hour here on Coast to Coast AM. So I'm looking forward to this when we come back. And welcome back to Coast, Kim Dennis, our guest. Let me tell you about the clairvoyant medium. Kim has spent years helping people talk to the other side in her private readings and appearances. Her goal is to share her experiences about life after death, how to live your best life and bring peace to those who have lost loved ones. It's a great service. Kim, welcome to the program.
Thank you so very, very much for having me on your show.
Now, I've been doing this show for almost 19 years. I don't remember interviewing you. This is your first time, isn't it?
This is my very first time. I am so incredibly excited. Yes, it is.
That's great. Good for you. And tell us about your book, What's Above? When did that come out?
I wrote that, I think about 18 years ago.
Really? That long ago?
It was that long ago, yes. Everybody says I should write another one. But
how did this all happen for you?
The mediumship part?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, you know what? I can go back as early as maybe like 5 or 6 years old.
Really?
And when I was growing up in Ontario, my best friend Maureen, her and I were inseparable. And we grew up together, and the difference between the two of us was that she was Catholic and I was not. And the only time her and I were ever apart is when she went to church and she went to school. And for some reason, I asked her one day about church and about God, and she turned to me and she said, you know, if you ask God for something, he'll give it to you, no matter what it is. And I was like, really? So I started to play a game with myself. I was like, I'd start asking God for little things, like I don't want to go to the dentist tomorrow, and I'd wake up and it'd have to be scheduled.
Please, God, please.
I'd go to the dentist. Or my grandparents never came to our home. They were elderly. We always went to see them. And I had redone my bedroom with my mom, and I still wanted grandma to see it. I woke up the next morning, and my mom said that my dad was going to go pick up my grandparents, and they were coming to the house for dinner. And I was like, geez, I'm on to something here. And that was my first clue that there was something more than this world. So then I leaped to when I was 13 years old, and I had my first out-of-body experience.
Uh-huh.
Came home from track and field practice, fell asleep on my bed, as teenagers do, had my first out-of-body experience. And that was the beginning of almost daily, nightly out-of-body experiences for the next 10 years.
I had an OBE when I was 11 years old, Kim. Never been able to duplicate it at all. I mean, I do all my exercises and things like that, but I just can't do it. But
I've never consciously been able to say, you know, I'm going to do this or I'm going to have it. It just happened. And for the, like I said, there were almost every night for 10 years from the time I was 13 to 23.
That happened to me. I was 11 years old, bouncing on the ceiling, looking down at my body and trying to figure out, is this a dream? What is this?
What is this? And I remember the first time, and it's just, that's what it was. I was just floating around my bedroom, and I would come in close, and I would look at myself, and I could see myself peacefully sleeping. And I had control over my movements, but if I just relaxed, I remember this, I was pulled towards one corner of my room, and I get closer, and then I would get a little bit frightened to leave. But I was never once was I scared that I thought I was going to die.
No, I didn't feel that way, and it was kind of cool floating along.
Totally cool. So, and then my mom opened the door to say dinner was ready, and boom, I was back in my body. And that was the first one. And then, like I said, that was almost every night for 10 years. And for the most part, I didn't go very far. I just go around my room. I remember going into my brother's room. He had a fish tank. I couldn't hear anything, but I could hear his fish tank going. So for the most part, I didn't go very far. But a couple times, I did go to a higher place. And which I would say is heaven. Heaven, and the feeling of being there is unlike anything wonderful that I can even describe here.
It's bliss, isn't it?
Oh my gosh, bliss, harmony, peaceful, everything just in divine order. And I saw, this is the weirdest thing, I saw colors there that don't exist here. I cannot recall them, but I know I saw them, and I can almost take myself to that place of the feeling of like awe of seeing colors, but I can't recall them because they didn't exist here. And at that time, about 13 and 14, a set of my grandparents had passed away, my dad's parents, and they had suffered in nursing homes. They were lovely people, but for the last few years of my life, well, I saw them. And they looked like my elderly grandparents, but they weren't sick anymore. And their eyes were almost like dewy. It was amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And then I also saw all these children that I knew were connected to me, but I mean, they weren't my kids, but I knew that they were connected to me somehow. And I remember telling my mom about this, and she kind of paused for a minute. Now, my mom's the youngest of nine kids, but she told me that my grandma had 19 pregnancies.
19?
19. She had nine children, but she had 19 pregnancies. Right, and I was like, oh, so that's who all the children were. And another thing I saw was I could see off in the distance that it was like a classroom, a room, and in there was all these people. And you remember the TV tables? It's like they all had these, and they had little screens. And my impression was that all these people had just arrived to the other side. They had crossed over. And what they were doing is they were watching everything they did down here. So that must be where my life flashed before my eyes came from, because it was like life review. They were watching everything they did. And not only were they watching their life that they just did, they were feeling everything that they made other people feel.
Would you say that this visitation of yours was towards heaven or somewhere else?
I would say so, yes. It felt like, for I don't know what else to call it, but it did. It felt like, I thought, if this has got to be heaven, this is what this feels like. And clearly my first thing was like, we survived this. We do. We survive this. So that was, I had a couple experiences like that where I went to a higher place and saw a few things, but the feeling of it was absolutely wonderful. So those out-of-body experiences, for the most part, continued until I was 23, almost exactly 10 years. And at 23, I had my first child.
A lot of people, Kim, say that people who have had astral projections will sometimes go through different planes or levels, and some of those levels you don't want to hang around in. Did that ever happen to you?
That didn't happen to me. And I can say, not at all. I've never, you know, I'm sure where there's good, there's bad, there's light, there's dark, there's on, there's off. I do believe that, but I've never experienced anything negative or bad. Not in my readings, not in channeling anybody.
Why do you think that is?
Out of body experience. I don't know. You know, I don't know. People ask me that often, is there bad spirits? I'm like, probably. Because I think that's how the universe works, right? I do, but I don't know if I'm just well protected. Maybe they want me to do this work. I guess so. That's why they gave me this ability to help others. But I've never, ever, like, encountered a bad spirit. I've been startled a few times when I've seen them or turn a corner or whatever. But I've never encountered anybody who's ever hurt me or felt that I was threatened, ever.
Well, beyond the astral projection at a young age, when did the intuitiveness kick in?
So at 23, I had my first child, and then it all stopped, my out-of-body experiences. I stopped remembering them, and I don't know if I was a sleep-deprived new mom or what, but when my daughter was little, I went back. I was a bank teller, and I went back to work part-time, and then the intuition phase kicked in, and it just went on for a number of years, and I just knew all kinds of useless information that I had no business knowing. You know, I worked in a bank in a mall, so I couldn't see the parking lot. I would think of a customer, write their name down, and they'd walk in the door. My coworkers would say, how do you know that? I was like, I don't know. I have no idea. And then I would, like, talk to my girlfriend in the middle of a conversation. I'm like, were you cutting fruit and cut your hand? She goes, yeah, I was cutting Matthew an orange this morning, and I cut my finger. How do you know? I was
Jeez.
Like, I don't know. You know, and then I'd be talking to somebody, and I just pick up all these little bits of useless information. And the people closest to me were starting to say, what is that? What's going on? And I'm like, I don't know. I don't know. I don't know why I know all this stuff. You know, and that, long story short, that went on for a long period of time. And I was just like, I don't know what this is. Maybe I'm just a girl with something extra or whatever. And I had this one moment. I was going into the grocery store. My youngest daughter was about four and was running in one Sunday morning. And I'm in Calgary, and I grew up in Toronto. And these people that lived across the street from me in Toronto popped into my head. Just the thought of them, I was like, that's weird. Why am I thinking about them? So they lived in Toronto when I was a child. I walk into the grocery store. I'm holding my daughter, and there they are standing at the meat counter. And I was like, I almost dropped my kid. She started to slide from my hands. I'm like, okay. And I don't know why that moment, but I just surrendered. And I said, I don't know what this is or what I'm supposed to do with it, but you need to show me the way.
When did you start channeling and doing that?
Well, that all kind of started around that time. I started picking up. I would be talking to people, and I'd say, who's Fred? I remember that. And my girlfriend said, that was my grandfather that died. And I said, did he only have one arm? She goes, yeah. How do you know that? And I was like, I don't know. I don't know. And just people started coming to me from the other side, and every time I talk to somebody or see them, it just feels like I was getting little messages, little bits of insight.
When we take questions next hour, Kim, with our incredible audience,
yeah.
What kind of questions are you looking for from them?
I don't know if I can answer answer everything. They can ask me. They can ask me anything about what happens when we die. You know, anything about old souls. I've got
anything specific about one of their dearly departed.
Yeah, they can ask me. Yes, yeah. I usually sit with people when I do a reading and sort of meditate a little bit. But yeah, they can ask me anything that they want.
Okay, and you know, and keep your readings to about a minute and a half to 2 minutes a person,
yes.
If
okay.
You would.
Sure. But if they want to ask me a specific question, yes, that would be great.
How many people have this ability that you have in terms of numbers?
That's a great question. You know, I think we're all psychic to a certain degree. I think I'm just gifted at it. You know, it's like we can all sing, but we're not all gifted singers. But what I do, I don't know. I kind of tend to think that there's not that many people. I haven't really met anybody specifically that there's lots of psychics and kind of get intuitive, but maybe not so much channel people who are crossed over. So,
well, you've channeled loved ones for people, haven't you?
I do. That's primarily what I do. People come to me basically for two reasons. They're grieving. They want to connect with somebody.
They want closure, don't they?
Yeah, they want closure. They want to know that that person's still around. You know, that person's still, that's still close by, that they're not as gone. You know, I can't bring anybody back, obviously, but I can narrow that gap so they don't feel the loss as much. It gives them some comfort.
Did you ever have doubts about the existence of the other side?
No, I never had doubts, but I never really thought about it that much, especially when I was young. I grew up with no sort of basis of religion or whatever whatsoever. But I always kind of thought that there was something more than this world, but I never really gave it. That was kind of a blank page. I never really gave it that much thought.
It's just remarkable.
Especially when I was young, until I started having out-of-body experiences. One cool thing is I actually saw a vision of Jesus.
What's he look like?
You know what? This is the whole thing. He looked like anybody I channel always comes in a form that you're going to recognize. Old people aren't old. Babies aren't babies. Sick people aren't sick. But they always come in a form you're going to recognize. And when I saw him, it was so quick. And I was awake. I was sitting on the couch, and I had my eyes closed, and all of a sudden he was there. And he looked like a picture you would see him with long brown hair, beard, mustache, and the most beautiful eyes. Beautiful eyes, and it was a particularly really low point in my life, and he came to me, and I knew who he was, but I was stunned, and I had to ask, I was like, who are you? And he said, Jesus, and he said everything was going to be okay, and then he faded out real quick, and then this, I don't know if she was an angel or what, but her face was completely round. I could see her face. It was like a gray color, and she had all these big bands of white, like, it almost looked like fabric floating all around her, and she told me the same thing as well, too, and then he kind of went away, and I was so incredibly humbled. I mean, look, I was at a low point in my life, but it wasn't that bad. I mean, there's children starving in the world. I thought, you know, I was really quite humbled that he took out a moment to come in to be with me, and once he did, if he comes and tells you, you know, everything is going to be okay, you got to kind of believe it.
Do you foresee the future?
I do. I do get insight into what's coming in your life as well, too. People think, how can you do that, you know? And I didn't really know. I've read, like, so many spiritual books to kind of get a grip of what was happening to me. But, you know, if I was to say to you, you know, just because something hasn't happened yet doesn't mean that it's not in the works. So I'm making this up, but if I say, oh, you're going to Hawaii in March, right? It's like, yeah, I am. How do you know that, even though you're not there yet? I can see that something's in the works. And with that as well, too, it's like, I don't know, I don't think you're going, I might say, I don't think you're going in the right direction because you have free will. And if you do, I think this is what's going to happen. But you do, you can, you know, create your life as you move through it. You can change direction.
How about COVID? When does it go away? Do you see that?
I don't know. You know what? Oh, my goodness. If I had a dime for everybody to ask, I'm not great on world stuff so much.
I mean, could you have predicted the presidential election and stuff like that? So you don't do that.
Don't so much. I kind of get a feel for myself, but I don't think about it. I don't think about it too much. So I'm now, interested in world events and stuff, but yeah, I don't get too much insight into that.
Would you say your specialty, your expertise is the dead?
It is. That is my specialty, is channeling people who are crossed over and giving them evidence that their loved ones are still with them. You know, that can be quite powerful. You know, I'll tell you a quick story. It was just this Christmas. I have this couple that have been coming to me for a number of years. They lost their daughter, Charity, in a car accident at Christmas time. And they come to me a couple times a year. They have for a number of years. And anyways, they usually come around Christmas because they come into town to do Christmas shopping. Anyways, because of COVID, they couldn't. But it's the 23rd of December. I'm home alone. And I'm getting ready for Christmas, and I pick up on Charity. She starts coming around, coming around, coming around. I'm like, okay, okay, you want me to phone your mom. So she's with me, she's with me, she's with me. And all she keeps telling me is that something about making chocolates, making chocolates. I'm like, okay, her mom's got to be doing this. So I stop what I'm doing. I phoned Deb, and I said, look, I said, Charity's around. I said, I know it's Christmas time. It's a hard time for you. I said, but she keeps telling me. She says, I said, what are you doing? Are you making chocolates, making chocolates? I said, that's all that she's telling me. She burst into tears. She goes, no, last night we had a chocolate fondue in her memory. I'm like, bingo, Merry Christmas.
Wow.
Your kid was there. Oh, I do that all the time, right? I was like, yeah, Merry Christmas. So,
how do you get into that meditative mode?
You know, sometimes if I'm going to do a reading, I'll sit down and I just kind of shut off my thinking. That was something I had to practice to do. I used to go to the spiritualist church a long time ago. Shut off my thinking. And I can just tell. I can just tell when the message isn't for me or if it's for someone else. But that day, I was just moving around the house. I was getting ready for Christmas, wrapping gifts. So I don't always have to be sitting still. And sometimes, like her, she's an exception because sometimes there are a few souls that people I've read for a long time that I get to know the souls a little bit. It sounds odd, but like Charity's one of them. Mm-hmm. I have another couple, their son shows up quite often. I'll phone them. I'll say, you got a leak in your roof. And she says, oh my God. She goes, we do. And I says, okay, you know, your son's around. So I try to, in a reading or message, give them something that there's no way that I would know.
Do you have spirit guides?
There's no way. What's that?
Spirit guides help you?
Well, I think, you know, it's funny. I think I'm more clairaudient more than anything else. If technically I hear them, I see them, I feel them, but I mostly hear them. What did you ask me again? Sorry.
Spirit guides.
Spirit guides. So I think that there's an entity, somebody that does help me with my readings. I think your spirit guide isn't separate from you. I think your spirit guide is that person you have the inner dialogue. Your soul guides you. Your spirit guides you.
Is it our guardian angel?
I think so. I think that there's... I'm not even really completely sure who helps me with this. I know I channel people who are crossed over. I do see them. I saw a little girl in my basement, actually, yesterday. I think it's connected to me.
In your basement?
I did. I went downstairs, and I've seen her. I live in a house that was built in the 1800s. And I did a bit of a land title search just to see who lived here. And there was a family that lived here in 1911. And I've been in my house for just over 15 years. And I haven't seen her for a while, but I saw her yesterday. And it's a little girl. She's got black curly hair, white face. And she runs past me all the time. I never see her face, but she runs past me. I went downstairs into my basement the other day, and she just sort of ran past me, and she giggled. And then I saw an older gentleman as well, too.
Are the spirits always...
I just think they're connected to the house, sorry.
Kim, are the spirits always happy, or have you come across some of them that are sad?
They're always happy for me. And maybe there's just because they're happy to come through and connect with their loved ones. You know, like I said, I can only based on my experience, but they always seem happy and they always seem at peace.
Have you ever been tricked?
We're all in a bit of fog down here, right? And I think when you cross over, all the lights go on, you know? And I think you have a better perspective and stuff of, you know, why you were down here and why things happened the way they did. And, you know, like they say, I think we all come here to learn, just like they say. It's like Earth is a big school, right? This is why I think we're all taking different classes, learning different lessons. There's no mistakes in life, only lessons. But lessons are repeated till you get them, and learning never ends. And I think when you can't learn anything more, your soul, I think you're called home. I think that that's what happens. Yeah, and I think that's why we don't all pass at the same age. You know, that's why it's, you know, we don't all cross over at 80. It's different for everybody.
How do you know you've connected with the other side and that it's not your imagination?
I can just tell. I've been doing it long enough. I can just tell. I can just tell that my imagination's not that great. But I can just tell that it's like, oh, I'm just like your dad's here. And, oh, you know, I don't know. I can just tell it just a different place that I go in my mind.
How long does it take to get into the mode or the state?
Not that long, really. It's just sometimes if you're my first reading of the day, I might start picking up a little bit of stuff as I'm getting ready. I might, or picking up on somebody. I'm like, you know what, your dad must be passed because he's been hanging around. You know, sometimes that happens. I'll get stuff ahead of time. But usually, I think the universe makes this happen, right? I think I'm just part of it. They make this happen. So, yeah. So usually they come in, they sit down, and right away, you know, I can sort of jump into it.
Do you? Are you sitting, lying down on a couch?
Sitting.
You are
sitting.
Okay.
I have my own chair. Yeah, it seems to work for me, but Yeah.
Now,
no,
would,
sometimes if I do phone ring, that's if I do it in person, phone ring sometimes.
Do they enter your body? Think about that. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. We're on with Kim Dennis, the clairvoyant Kim, as we call her. Mm-hmm. And we will be taking your calls next hour with her, and she'll just need a question and she'll or a question about clairvoyancy, whatever. Channeling. Remember the Whoopi Goldberg movie Ghost?
Oh, my gosh. My girlfriend calls me Oda Mae Brown all
now,
the time.
I was going to ask you, Dad, do the spirits enter you like they did her?
No, I don't. They don't do that. I just tap into a higher vibration so I can hear them talk. I think they lower their vibration, and I have a higher one, so we kind of meet somewhere there in the middle. But no, they don't. I'm not like a, I guess they call it a physical medium. No, that doesn't happen.
I was on with Whoopi Goldberg when she was on The View years ago.
Oh, is that?
And it was just great to meet her because I wanted to play around with her on the air, but I didn't. I was going to call her Oda Mae.
Oda Mae. I know my girlfriend calls me that all the time.
If she didn't laugh, I'd be trapped. So I didn't go there. So tell me a story of one of your clairvoyant episodes that people will just love.
This is kind of a cool story. I have this girl. She's been coming to me for a number of years, and because her husband died in an H2S explosion.
Oh,
and she comes to me numerous times, and her husband always comes through, and they're really good readings and give her comfort. And then one of the readings, just out of nowhere, when I was reading for her, I said, are you adopted? And she kind of looked at me, and she goes, yeah. I said, I never knew that. And I said, huh. And I said, I think you know your birth mom. And she said, yeah, I do. I said, but I don't think you have any idea who your birth dad is. She goes, actually, I don't. I said, really? And she didn't even ask me about this, right? So I'm like, so in all fairness, she's really short with red hair, I'll just say that. So I said, you know, I think his name's Larry Fisher. And she goes, what? And I said, yeah, I do. I think that's his name. And I said, you know, I don't think you have your adoption records. Now, her mom is somehow, I don't know how she knew her. I think she was maybe part of the family somehow.
Mm-hmm.
But I says, you know, I don't think you have your adoption records. I said, I think you should send away for them. I said, there's 8 pages on the second last page. I think his name is there. And she said, really? And I said, yeah. I said, hey, I said, I think you look just like me, a little short guy with red hair. And I said, I said, do you know anybody who drives like big, big trucks? And she's like, no. I said, what about a fire trucks? And she says, nope. I said, okay. I said, all right, do whatever you want with it. So she leaves. I kind of forget about it. She gets a hold of me a couple months later, and she says, you're not going to believe this. I said, what? And she says, I sent away for my adoption record, second last page, my dad's name, Lawrence Evan Fisher. He's fire chief in Calgary.
You hit it right on the head.
Fire chief in Calgary, and he came
spot
to
on.
He came to my door. He goes, "How did he didn't even know about her?
He did not know that he was a father.
No, he didn't. And she looks just like him. He's a little short guy with red hair. And the funny thing is when I saw him, I was like, "Why do you look so familiar? He's the fire chief in Calgary in my neighborhood, so I've seen him on the local.
You've seen him around.
I've seen him on the local news a couple times when there's been problems. Yeah. Yeah, now...
Well, now,
They're the best of friends.
I was going to say, did he do the right thing?
Pardon me? Yes, they became really good friends. Yes,
great.
They became really good friends. Yeah, and that's why he came to see me. He came to thank me. And he was like, how did you know that? He says, I didn't even know about her. And I'm like, oh, that's what I do. And yeah, now they're the best of friends. And he retired, but he still owes me a ride on the fire truck. All the bells and whistles. Yeah, so if he's listening.
Preferably there's no fire they're going to.
No, just take me for a ride. So that was one cool story. You know, I have channeled a few. I you know what? You guys were talking about Lizzie Borden. I did spend the night in the Lizzie Borden house. Spent the night in the room where she hacked her stepmother to death.
Oh, my God. Did you feel anything?
No, I didn't. I slept. Everybody looked at me the next morning. I'm like, nothing. I said, I slept just fine.
Were you expecting to?
Well, I don't know. I was open to it. I actually went to Fall River and did a talk. They asked me to come back. I was picking up some stuff on her, and my girlfriends and I, we went down for a visit, spent the night, went to Salem and stuff like that. And then we went to the Historical Society in Fall River, and they invited me to come back to do a talk. They were doing a series of talks on Lizzie Borden, so I did that. So it was kind of cool.
You've done some work for missing children police departments, haven't you?
I have, yeah. I have a really cool story, actually. There was two. I was working with Missing Children's of Canada for quite a while, and I'm still open if they ever want to call me. But Rhonda Morgan, she doesn't work there anymore, but she was running it in the Calgary office here. And she got a hold of me and was asking me about a few different cases. One was these two young boys, I think they were about 10 or 11, that they went missing in Northern Ontario. And I had heard of them, or one of them anyways, and there were posters around, and they'd been gone for years. And she just out of the blue, she said to me, she goes, "Are you getting anything on this Eric and John, these two boys that went missing?" And I paused for a minute, and I was like, you know what? And I guess one of the boys, their father was a suspect. He passed away from cancer of killing them. I said, "I don't think he did it." I said, "Is there," and I don't know anything about the area, I said, "Is there anything like gravel pits or whatever?" And she said, "Actually, there's quite a few." And I said, "I think one boy fell in and the other one went to help him." I said, "I think that that's what happened." And she says, "Really?" And I said, "Yeah." I said, "You know what? I said, what I'm getting is that one of the boys' bikes, there's something really special about one of the boys' bicycles." And she goes, "What is it?" And I said, "I don't know. They won't tell me." I said, and she goes, "That seems weird." I said, "I know." I said, "I don't know if I'm right, but there's something really, really special about one of the boys' bicycles." So anyways, the next day, I don't know who she phoned or what she did, Rhonda, but she called me back and she says, "Guess what?" She says, "The boy John, he won his bicycle the day before he went missing." I said, "That's it." I said, "I think they're in the, I don't think you'll find them." I said, "I think they're in the gravel pit." So, and there was a woman, I have the message recorded, I don't want to hear it, but her husband went missing before Christmas in Louisiana. And she got a hold of me, I think her name is Judy Brown, and she said, "You know, my husband's been missing, Tommy Brown, we don't know where he is." And I said, "Okay." I said, "Leave it with me." So I was getting a few things. I called her back, and I said, "If you go out your backyard," I said, "there's a road, but it's sort of like for trails and stuff." She goes, "It is." And I said, "You've got a broken fence." She goes, "I do." I said, "In the right corner." I said, "He went out that way. He made a right." And I said, "If you go down so far," I said, "you're going to see an old truck, an old rusted out truck there." And I said, "If you make a left and go up," anyways, I gave him a description where and they found him. And actually, I had the police from the Louisiana police call me twice because they thought I was onto something. And then she phoned and left me a message, and I talked to her, and they did find his body.
Have you ever found anybody who just ran away? They escaped? They just want to hide?
Well, kind of not found them, but I there was a girl that was missing in Michigan, and I said, you know, she ran off with a boyfriend. "Oh, she's a straight A student." I'm like, "Well," I said, "she left her phone behind." I said, "I think she did that for a reason. I don't think she was kidnapped." And I said, I believe that, you know, she was talking to some boy. And I said, she escaped through a window to be with him. And so I don't know exactly where she went, but they did find her and she was alive. So.
What did the police department say about your ability?
You know, it depends. They like it to be their idea. You know, they don't do much on it, although I do have a husband, a wife, he's a police chief, and she's a police officer, and they come to me for readings anyways. Those are the police officers that kind of, that will, if I have some information, will listen to it. But I have lots of bits and pieces of different cases and stuff like that, you know, and sometimes I'm not always supposed to be part of the solution as much as I'd like to be. You know, but I can usually, if I can't find them, give some sort of insight into what happened. So,
do you have to be careful, Kim?
The families.
Do you have to be careful that you're not the suspect?
No.
I mean, if you tell them things that they don't, that only the murderer would know. Let's say.
No. But that's a good. Nobody's ever said no.
Okay.
Nobody's ever done that. I'm not capable of anything like that. No.
I didn't think so. But you never know.
You never know. Yeah, no. I'm just at my little home here in Calgary.
Well, when these messages come to you, how do they flow to you? Kind of describe that for us.
It's just like sometimes I get like images in my head. You know, if I was to say to you, you know, like, you know, if I said like a baseball, you don't have it in front of you, but you can see it in your mind's eye. It's kind of, well, that actually, when that happens, that's actually your soul that's seeing that. You know, if I said, you know, close your eyes and, you know, you can see a sports car, you can see a baseball, do you see that? Okay, that's the real you looking at that stuff. that's the real you, right? And you know, too, you know, people talk about, you know, their soul and your body. Your body's just your vehicle to get you around while you're here. You know how you always hear older people say, oh, you know, I'm old, but I still feel like the same young person on the inside. My grandpa used to say that at 90. He said, oh, I still feel like the same soldier, you know, young guy I was on the inside. Yeah, you know why? Because that's your soul. It doesn't age. That's why people, they don't even realize what they're saying most of the time. That's why, even though, yeah, you always feel like that same young person on the inside, because your soul is timeless. It doesn't have an age. And when people cross over, regardless of their condition or how old they are, it always feels like they're in their 20s, like the prime of their life. That's what your soul feels like.
Well, you know, when I was 10 years old, I wondered, what would it be like in 2020 when I get older and stuff like that? And then you get to that point, you think back to that time that you were thinking that as a youngster, and in a lot of cases, you're still thinking that same way.
Well, you are. You're basically the same person. You're wiser. You have life experience and stuff like that, granted. But on the inside, you still kind of feel like the same person that you always were. You know, and that's because that's what I think, that's your soul. That's it. That part of you is eternal.
I always wondered.
You don't really die, you change form, right?
I always wondered about, like, my father when he was 60 or 70. He died at 88. And, you know, what is going through their minds in terms of that youth feeling? And, you know, as you get up in age, you realize that you remember these things as a kid. You're still young at heart.
You're still young at, yes, that's another way of saying it, young at heart. You know, when you point to yourself, where do you point? You point to your chest. You don't point to your head, right? That's where you are. Right? That's it. And you still feel like the young, like I said, you've got life experience and all that kind of stuff, but you still kind of feel like, I remember my grandpa saying that all the time, I still feel like the young soldier, you know? And I'm like, Gramps, you are on the inside, you are. I said, just the outside just gets older. But the inside is timeless, it doesn't age. But when I channel people, they come in a form that you're going to recognize, otherwise you wouldn't know that it's them, right? Just like when you see them in your dreams, a lot of people get visits and dreams as well, too. And they're not really dreams, I think they're just visits when you sleep.
What does the dead want?
I think they want us to know the basic is that they're still with us, you know, that they're not as gone as we think that they are, right? That try to narrow that gap a little bit. I try not to make it as spooky, you know, try to make it more natural, you know, that you can build a different relationship with them, you know, that and give them the indications. Messages are subtle, but you don't have to be psychic to pick up on your loved ones that are around. And I tried to give them different instances on you know, oh, why that is happening, you know. It's like a reoccurring thought, you know. It's just like, why am I thinking about that person all day? Or you'll get some memory, you know, of your dad. Not that you forgot, but something you haven't thought about in a long time, right? And you're like, where the hell is that coming from? Look at the person that it's attached to. This is the most common way. I think there's lots of ways they let us know that they're around. You know, it's like, geez, and you kind of go to this place, you know, a memory of when your dad, when you were like 12 years old or something like that. So, and then there's lots of other more specific ways. You know, smells, anything really that makes you think of him. Funny, the other day with my dad's passed, I was thinking about him and, you know, kind of got in my car, started up, and there was Johnny Cash right there.
Huh.
That was the biggest Johnny Cash.
Did he say, hi, everybody, I'm Johnny Cash?
Yeah, I'm Johnny Cash. No, and it was Walk the Line. I actually played that at his service, right? And I was like, oh, Dad, yes, there's a sign that it's you. So I don't believe there's anything. I don't believe there's such a thing as coincidence, as I don't believe in luck either.
I'm the same.
For a reason. Yep. I think you don't always know what the reason is, but I think everything does happen for a reason.
Do you think the dead wants closure? It's themselves.
Oh, I think they're fine. I think they have closure. That's my impression. Yeah, they're where they're supposed to be. I think they understand that better than we do.
Yeah, we're the ones who want it.
Yes, we are, and it's just like funerals and everything that you do to, you know, to honor them and celebrate their life afterward. That's all really for us. You know, so that we can honor them and process, you know, their passing and their grief and do something, you know. I think you're either in your body or you're not. I don't know if there's any in-between place or whatever. I don't. But anybody that I've ever, you know, channeled or whatever, they've never come through saying that, you know. They might say that they had a rough time when they were here. You know, like say that if they committed suicide or whatever that they did. But like to reassure the people that are here that they are, that they're in a happy place and, yeah, that they're still with them.
Have you ever had evil come across?
I haven't. You know what? I have.
You've been lucky.
I think I have. You know what? I know. I've been doing readings. I started doing radio in 99, and I was doing readings for about 2 years before that. And I've never encountered anything that, I mean, I've been startled, but just, you know, But I've never been scared. I've never encountered anything bad. I've never had nothing evil, nothing. Because you know what? This can only add to my life. And I don't know. I just kind of decided if this was taken away from my life or whatever, I'm not interested. Right? So this can only add to my life. And with that, help other people with it as well, too. So I don't know if it's just my attitude or whatever, or I just never expected this to be anything but a good thing or to add to my life. So, you know, you get what you expect in life. So I've just always thought in those terms. But I've never been frightened, never felt threatened, never felt scared or anything like that.
Tell us about the book, What's Above?
Pardon me?
Tell us about the book.
Well, that's it. The book is just how I became a medium, sort of my journey. And then it's a collection of different stories of different people who have come to me for reading.
Can people still get it?
Yeah. If anybody wants one, just send me an email. Maybe I shouldn't say that. You guys have lots of listeners. I'll send you one. I'll send you one for free. I'll send you one. But yeah, it's just a little short book. It's easy to read. It's just like a little collection of different stories of different people who came to me for reading.
And
I channeled some famous people.
Like?
Well, one really cool story is, this was only last year, I went, these two lovely gentlemen live in Calgary, and they had invited me to come into their home, which I don't usually do, to do a reading. I said, well, I don't know. And they said, well, we have an old house and lots of cool things in it. And I'm like, and they sounded really nice. So I was like, okay, I'll come over. So I went over one evening. Oh, my gosh, I walked into this house. It was a house from 1910, and it was beautiful. And it was like, if Liberace had a house, I would think this was it. I mean, it was just amazing.
Yeah.
Crystal chandeliers and... So anyways, I'm sitting and I'm giving them what I think was a really good reading. And the whole time I'm doing it, I keep getting Winston Churchill.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And I'm thinking, I'm not saying anything. I'm like, Winston Churchill. And I'm like, what the hell am I picking up on him? So near the end, I said, look, I got to say this. I said to one of the fellows, I said, why do I think I'm picking up on Winston Churchill? And he looked at me, goes, really? And I said, yeah. And he says, I'll tell you why. He says, because I have 7 original letters that he wrote. And he said, I was looking at them today. I said, great, that's why.
That's amazing. Kim, yeah. We're going to take a break, and we're going to come back and take phone calls with our incredible listeners on Coast to Coast AM.